This is Karen Lell of SailSport Talk, and I'm here with Rock Gosling, a member of the Tuna Club. Can you tell us a fish story? And I would love to have a little bit of the competition between your members and female anglers.
We're an amateur angling club. We do it for points and bragging rights. But we also are, if you said you did it, you did it. And you were taken at your word. But if it was found out you didn't, there was consequences. You were out of the club. One of our members, we're fortunate to have him, Zane Grey, the Western novelist. One of our members at the time, and I believe he was president at the time, Keith Spaulding. His wife was also a member and an angler of good standings and incredible talent also in her own right. But Zane Grey was highly competitive. If you've ever read any of his novels, or in particular any of his fishing novels, he had no lack of self-promotion. But he set a tuna club record, and it may have actually been a world record at the time also, on a swordfish in our local waters. It's well over 500 pounds. It was a feat that was quite a derring do, and he was very proud of it, and he should have been. But his record was eclipsed by a woman, Mrs. Spaulding. She may have probably weighed 90 pounds, and her fish was well over 500 pounds and beat Zane Grey's record for a tuna club fish. And Zane Grey decided that there's no way that a woman could have bested his record, and she had to have had help. She couldn't have done it by tuna club rules. A rule was broken, must be DQ'd. An investigation did ensue, as it turned out, after all interviews. Mrs. Spaulding did indeed land the fish by all tuna club rules and regulations. Her tackle was within our specifications, which are very strict. She didn't rest the rod on the gunwale of the boat or have assistance from other crew members. No one else touched the rod. No one else touched the line until the fish was ready to bring to gaff. So Zane Grey was given two choices. He was to publicly apologize to Mrs. Spaulding for doubting her word, or resign from the club. He did both. The world of deep water angling probably owes that moment a debt of gratitude, because he packed up all his toys and piled them all on his large sailing yacht and began an adventure around the South Pacific and posted more and more world records and more firsts and brought our sport around the world.
All right, you hear Christopher Cross, and you know it's time to talk to Karen Lyle from SailSportTalk.com, because that's what we do on Tuesdays at 9:40 Pacific time. Karen, I know you scheduled a guest to come on, and that's Stephanie Brady. Right now we're trying to get her, so in the meanwhile, I throw it to you. What's new out there on the open waves?
Well, I just spent the week on Catalina Island, and I went over by helicopter, retracing the route of Glenn Martin on his seaplane in 1912, and then I came back to L.A. Airport on heli. So those are my first helicopter rides, and I love being in a helicopter. Have you been in a helicopter before?
I never have, so that's pretty cool that you, you know, it wasn't scary, huh?
No, not at all. But, you know, my stepfather was the operations manager for Pan American Airlines. And so when I was in Okinawa there and also in Los Angeles, I used to fly all the time. So I'm used to being in a plane. So it's not an unfamiliar sensation. And I've been in small planes and cargo planes and, you know, planes and safaris, small planes going into the British Virgin Islands, you know, across the Serengeti. So somehow it doesn't bother me. It's just a lot of fun. I think I enjoy the wind and the whole concept of flying. That's what sailing really is. It's flying too on the water.
You went across the Serengeti, huh?
I have. Yes.
Seen any giraffes?
Probably about many times, actually, yes. Mm. Yes, lots of giraffes. So it's really interesting because the giraffes do something called necking. And
in the back of a 57 Chevy and Inspiration Point.
Well, for a giraffe, you know, they have that really long neck. And so when they're adolescents, they basically, one will put its neck on the other and push it down. And they'll play with their necks. And it helps them to get more sturdy balance when they're growing up. So it's an unusual phenomenon. But, you know, actually there's a lot of similarities between Zanzibar, which is an island, and Catalina Island. You know, it seems like island life is really quite, it has similarities throughout the world, wherever you are. It's a small place and everybody knows each other. And, yeah.
Well, let's get a report on Catalina. Island. How'd you like Avalon? Did you go up to Wrigley's house? Did you go to the movie theater on the water? What'd you do?
Well, it was the week that the Art Deco Society of Los Angeles was there. And so there were about 700 people from all over who were dressed in late 1930s, early 1940s clothes. So I did that too. And they also had silent movie festival there at the Catalina Island Museum of Art and History. And so I got to see my first Buster Keaton movie and Rudolph Valentino movie. Mm-hmm. So we saw Sherlock Jr. with Buster Keaton and then Blood and Sand with Rudolph Valentino, and it was with live music that was improvised to it. So that was a fun experience. I can see why people like silent movies when they first came out.
Did you ride around in a golf cart?
I did. So they have a limit as to what kind of vehicles they can have on the island, and people who are residents there have to wait for a spot to open up. Someone has to either retire their vehicle or they have to move off the island before they can get permission to have a vehicle on the island. So most of the vehicles are electric, and so they have all these little golf carts going on all over everywhere, and it's quite its own world, that's for sure.
What would be your favorite restaurant? I like that Mexican place on the water. I forgot the name of it.
Well, there's one called Pete's, which is kind of a gathering place, and it's pretty close to the pier. And they have, I guess, after the Avalon Ball, which they had a big band performing there, and I did a special postal cancellation, USPS Building Bridge, a special postal cancellation on Saturday evening. And then after the ball, a lot of the people who were at that event decided to come over to Pete's, and they stayed there till like 2 o'clock in the morning and singing and ukulele and, you know, having a good old time.
How fun.
It was good too.
How fun. You run can you play the ukulele, Karen?
No, but my best girlfriend, Jane Doherty, is very good on the ukulele, and she's the life of the party for sure.
Couple more questions for Karen Lyle. So what else did you do when you were in Catalina here? We got about another 75 minutes in this segment.
75 minutes? That's wonderful. We could talk all day, Rick.
Well, go ahead.
Well, you know, I was really intrigued by the way in which the people who live on Catalina Island really incorporate history into their consciousness, because a lot of times, you know, we have, we get going into our, you know, all the things that we're doing with modern technology and, you know, social networks and things like that. But, you know, on an island, it seems that, you know, because so many things have been preserved, they have a conservation area there. And they also, you know, don't have regular gas guzzling vehicles mostly on the island, and there's a lot of boating, of course, because it's an island, you have to get there by boat. People are really focused on preserving the old ways. I had a chance to talk to somebody who was from the Tuna Club, which was established in about 1898, and that was that was really an interesting, hearing the perspective and walking through the tuna club and seeing all of the trophies that were mounted on the wall and all the angler's accomplishments.
And for you, when you took the helicopter back, was it the kind of thing where you wish you could sail back, or was it, are you like hooked on helicopters now?
Well, I like adventure, so, and new experiences. So it was fun to be above the boats. You could see all the sailboats down below. And, you know, I'm looking forward to flying in a seaplane next, because then I get the best of both worlds, you know, get to be on the water and then up in the air and back to the water. So sometime in the next couple of months, I'm probably going to go back and do a seaplane ride.
So what's new at the website, sailsporttalk.com?
Well, we have a collection of podcasts from all of our past shows, and we're on show number 164. And as you know, over the last 3 years, we've been interviewing guests that really represent the breadth of things that happen on the water. So we have tall ship captains. We've got Tom Slingsby, Rome Kirby, Ben Ainsley from the America's Cup and the SailGP. And we have Vondegold people who have been around the world in the Vandeglobe race. And we've also got people from different yacht clubs, and we've represented power boats as well as sailboats. And all of these stories are up there by name, so you can search by name, or you can go to iHeartRadio and see the podcasts that are under Sailsport Talk with Karen Lyle and just listen to them consecutively. Some of the boaters tell me that when they're working on their boats, they just put the show on and listen to the shows back to back.
Wow. What would you say, because for me, it's Sir Robin Knox Johnston. That guy was great. And the other guy, the Admiral, who got he was in the United States Navy for a year, but he was a British Admiral. His name escapes me. What was that guy's name?
Oh, John McAnally?
Yeah, so I think those are two of my favorite guys. For you, what were some of your faves?
Oh, you know, I really enjoy talking to Tom Slingsby. I appreciate his skill and expertise. Seems like we've had a lot of Australians. That is the thing. We have Elena, who was stuck in New Zealand during the first part of the pandemic and circumnavigated the island there with her dog. Remember, we talked to her. And, you know, I think I enjoy the people who have a passion for what they do. And that's one of the reasons I enjoy interviewing people on all different topics. I enjoyed Tracy Edwards, one of the first women to win the Whitbread with her all-women team. And certainly you remember Walt Ranieri, the blind sailor. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these people are friends of mine. So it's, you know, I don't just see them on the show. I see them outside of it as well.
And for you, you know, remind everybody what you do with your sailing and your boats.
Well, I am a cruiser primarily, so I don't do racing myself. I like to interview racers. And so I do adventures. I sail in the British Virgin Islands, in San Francisco Bay. I've been down to Mexico from San Francisco to Vallarta. I've sailed dhows in Zanzibar. And recently during the pandemic, opened a sailing school at the Berkeley Marina called Sailing Portal with the instructors who were there with OCSC, which was a sailing school there for 40 years that closed during the pandemic.
What would, is it possible for me to get a fake degree from the school just as a favor?
A fake degree? Not at all. You have to have the skill, dude. But, you know, you can take lessons, and within, you know, each class is incremented in about 4 days of lessons on the water and some tests. And there's, you know, standards that U.S. Sailing set. This is a U.S. Sailing accredited school. And so, you know, if you go out there and put your time in and the instructors know how to teach you, you'd actually be able to pass and And you could say you were a sailor too, you know.
How many classes do you teach personally?
I don't teach the classes. So I just set up the school. The teachers who are teaching there have been teaching full time since like the late 90s and have a lot of experience. And so I actually went through as a student and took the classes, even though I've been sailing for many years. I wanted to certify since we set up the school. And I was really surprised at the and delighted with the lessons, especially because we got to practice what to do when things go wrong. And you know, for example, if you're coming back in the marina and you've put your sails down and the engine dies and the wind's blowing, coming from behind, how do you dock downwind without any sails and engine? You know, we practice things like that. You know, how do you use lines to help you get into or out of a spot? Lines mean the ropes that are attached to the boat that are working. When the wind is coming for a direction, it's kind of difficult to maneuver or get out between different boats. You get to practice all these things from people who've had a lot of experience, and I'd rather do it that way than the way of, oh, I didn't know what to do. So I tried this, and it didn't work.
No doubt. Karen Lyle, SailSportTalk.com, and we do it every Tuesday at 9:40. Karen, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Rick. We'll talk to you next week.